Hello and welcome.
Bienvenido.
Lei ho.
And assalamu alaikum.
Welcome to AO Access to Success,
the podcast series developed by the AO Access Task Forces
to broaden your perspectives
for personal and professional development.
Today's podcast is hosted by Tatiana Topolovich, Senior Program Manager, Diversity, Inclusion and Mentorship.
Hello, my name is Tatiana Topolovich. I am managing AO Access, which is the program through which AO delivers all its diversity, inclusion and mentorship programs. Welcome to today's AO Access to Success podcast. Today, we're actually going to dive into the journey and achievements of AO Access. Mandated by the AO Foundation Board in June 2020, this initiative has been instrumental in driving positive change within the organization. As we reflect on the progress made over the past 3.5, almost 4 years, it's essential to acknowledge dedicated efforts of our AO Access Steering Committee, the task force leads, and of course, the task force members. From the inception of the program to its ongoing evolution, the AO Access Group has been guided by a commitment to openness, inclusivity, and excellence that I haven't observed anywhere else before. Today, we have the privilege of hearing from two leaders of our three task forces, whose terms are coming to an end this summer. Together, we're going to explore the successes, challenges, and lessons learned during their time. Join us today as we celebrate achievements, share insights, and chart a course for continued growth and innovation in fostering diversity, inclusion, and mentorship within the AO Foundation, hopefully providing valuable guidance for those interested in setting up and or improving their own diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as mentorship programs. Today, I have with me Matthew Allen, Task Force Lead of the Officer and Faculty Selection Processes Task Force, and Marius Pirperis from the AO Access Mentorship Task Force. Matthew, can I ask you to take us back to the beginning of this initiative, which initially was known as the Opportunity, Diversity and Inclusion Initiative. We refer to it as ODII, which now known as AO Access. What were the driving forces behind its inception and how did it evolve and any stories you remember?
Sure. Well, thanks, Tatiana. It's a pleasure to be able to talk about this. You know, the ODI for me started with conversations within AO VET International Board, recognizing that VET and CMF at that time were probably the two clinical divisions that had an increasing majority of women membership, and certainly within the veterinary sphere, it's far in excess. The youngsters coming into our profession are predominantly female at this point. And so it was very evident from sort of scanning any room, whether you're at trustees or at international board. At that point, Amy Kapatkin was the only woman on the international board and the only one who'd been on it for a while. And so there have been discussions initiated by the then chair of VET, Carl Kirkahead, to try and level the field a little bit more and do a better job of representation. And I think it sprung out of that initially VET program to try and think about ways that we could better engage across the board with the diversity of underrepresentation in all its forms across our clinical division. And then at the institutional level through the foundation, it became evident that, you know, while gender certainly wasn't the only issue that others were facing, there was a tremendous amount of inequity in terms of access to opportunity. And in particular, we felt very much a problem with progression through the organization. For most of us, the terms of reference of our divisions mean that essentially there's an opportunity almost like a whirlpool to stay in one place. And essentially, selection is from within. And it's almost quite hard to get spat out of the system, which obviously isn't conducive to developing new talent. So, you know, you and I first met back at dinners back in the day to start thinking about expanding this initiative, which didn't really have a name at that point within VET, and then to take it to the next level of at the sort of foundation level. And, you know, I think we struggled even with the name. It was very evident that there were real challenges in trying to initiate a discussion about this. Everybody knew it was the right thing, but you know, even coming up with a name that everybody would agree on was challenging. And so, you know, back in 2017 at the origins of this, and then in 2018, as we went to Davos and first met with leadership about this, you know, we really struggled to sort of essentially feel like we had an ability to do this in a non-confrontational manner. We wanted to make this an inclusive experience. And it was evident that that many felt that this was something of a sort of a checkbox exercise. And so I think it took a lot of our energy early on to try and get to a point where we could have this taken seriously as being not just the right thing to do in a sort of moral sense, but also the right thing to do for this foundation, this organization we care about, because essentially it's business critical to make sure that our talent pool is the best possible. And that means being absolutely diverse and representative of the tremendous membership that we've got.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great, Matthew. Talking about opportunities and access to opportunities, with the survey, the large-scale evidence-based survey we did in 2019 with Emika Patkin, yourself, and Samantha Morello, that's when we really had data then to move forward, which then allowed us also to have, for example, open calls. So to your earlier comment, and Marnus, if I can ask you to comment here, we had an open call where we asked for people who are interested in DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, to apply really with a letter of intent or letter of motivation, expressing their interest and potentially their expertise. Marnus, could you share your experience on becoming a task force lead via this open call?
Yeah, thank you, Tatiana. And it's a pleasure to be able to reflect and on some of the challenges and also the opportunities. And the first I'd really heard of the project was when I heard your team, I think it was yourself and Amy and Sam presenting the data in Davos. And at that stage, you know, I always thought that the AO was sort of rich of ideas and different ways of working together. But I saw this really fresh initiative that started inspiring me. And we had done a little bit of work with the Australian Orthopaedic Association on a diversity and inclusion strategy. We'd done a little bit of work on the mentorship program. So when the opportunity arose, I thought, wow, what a great way to start integrating some of these ideas, some of these values that will help sort of build respect and inclusion, you know, within our culture at the AO and help not only elevate the culture, but make it incredibly relevant to the next generation. And our challenge, where I sit in the community development office as the chair of the Asia Pacific, is really relevant to the next generation of not only AO members, but also AO leaders. So for me, it was a natural coming together of a few elements and needs in what I felt I needed to contribute to the AO. And I applied, and I applied in very much an open call. I wasn't really aware of what an open call in AO would look like. Traditionally, there hadn't been too many elections as we'd advanced through the different elements of the AO in the leadership structure. So this was a fresh and really invigorating part of the process, because I had the opportunity to try and articulate some of my ideas and some of my views, some of my passions and experiences, and then wait for the review process and see whether I would be successful in being able to contribute to the mentorship program. And at the time, I still am very passionate about mentorship, because that provided, and I think provides, a great comms channel for many of the different elements that we need to deliver. And I think, having seen the open call process a number of times since then, it really is a nice, fresh way where we get to look at, review, and select people very much based on their ideas and their intent and their experiences, without actually knowing who they are, what their backgrounds necessarily would be, and not focusing on elements that traditionally may have influenced us when we were selecting people to perform different roles within the AO. So it was this freshness and this forward-thinking approach that really brought me on board, because I thought, wow, this had helped make the AO relevant to the next generation and sustainable as our organization that we'd been a part of for a long time.
I hope you would all agree with me that it's worth to tap into the unknown and take the risk of doing open calls. And the initial work may be a little more, but then getting to work with people who are motivated because they applied for it, because they self-nominated. I think that's one of the reasons why we have come so far in just over 3 years. So now I would like to go and apply what we call the AO feedback model and start a little bit to brainstorm on our experiences, what went well, and then what to do differently. Matthew, would you mind elaborating a little bit on specific successes and milestones that we achieved with AO Access?
Sure. So, I mean, I think at the front end of this, I would reiterate what you just said, what Marinus alluded to as well, which is, I think, one of the tremendous successes for me personally in this journey was the use of an open call and blinded screening process, because it brought together a tremendous group of individuals who it's been a pleasure to work with. You know, I've never been involved in any other thing that I've done in a process that was as transparent. And of course, there was risk in that, but we got the most diverse and the most fantastic group of individuals. And that's been a very significant reason why this for me has been a sustainable journey, because of these people and the fact that they are different, but they are really at their core tremendous people who are passionate. So I think for me, that stands out. The group of people we were able to assemble stands out as one of the absolute shining glories of the program. Beyond that, in terms of tangible things, as it were, that the program was able to do, I think we were able to define and verbalize a mission and vision that resonated with the membership, particularly the younger membership, which again is the future. I think we generated some very useful outputs in terms of purpose statements. I think we tried to initiate a number of sort of policy documents and approaches, whether that's to how we would do a transparent open call or other things. I think also we were really effective in generating, I mean, largely through your leadership and Sam, able to get that ODI survey, which was not an insubstantial amount of work, off the ground and bring those data back. And that, I think, was really important. You know, we work with a group of surgeons who are very sort of data stroke evidence driven, very passionate about what they do, but they want to be convinced. And there is nothing more convincing than getting current data. And so while there were some flaws in the way that we did it, and we can do better the next time, and need to do better the next time, I think having data was enormously important in allowing us to explain that this was real, that there was a real desire within the membership and the leadership at that time, in terms of the sort of CD leadership, to see change, to see process. I think all of us understand the need to step aside at the right time and let new blood come in and take over, but the mechanisms weren't easily there. And there's always a fear when you're in a leadership role, you want to leave the place. For me, the goal is to leave the place and the organization in better hands than it is when I'm there. Some would say that's not so hard. Others might argue, but that's my premise, is that I'd like to leave it better. And for me, that means we've got to step aside fairly early and not go out of the organization, but go maybe just to the side and provide more of a mentorship role, as Marinus alluded to bring these new leaders in. And then at that point, at some point, we can then fully step aside from that role, knowing again that the next generation has got this.
Thank you, Matthew. We'll talk a little bit later about rotation in AO Access. Marinus, from your side, in terms of what went well with your task force or specifically in regard to the mentorship program?
Yeah, thank you, Tatiana. So we knew what we were trying to achieve, and the challenge was putting the content into an AO format and delivering it through AO comms channels And the thing that went really well was the engagement of the people that we were working with. They were all passionate about it. They did a lot of work. They did plenty of research. They remained focused. As a group, we created definitions. We created mission and purpose statements. And I was impressed how we bounced the ideas around in a very open and inclusive and safe way between each other, until we came to the point where we thought, yep, we think that finally encapsulates what we're trying to describe.
I thought that your energy and your passion and your commitment to the project, Tatiana, was pivotal to delivering the project along the timelines that we described together as a group. And I found everyone, they were constructive, they thought outside the square. We looked at different models, we looked at different elements of content related to mentorship. We tried to incorporate that with and align that with the various projects that were ongoing, including leadership and faculty selection. And we tried to create an AO product that allowed the membership to build, to understand, and to work harmoniously together. And I think we did that along a timeline. We overcame challenges, particularly related to the online platforms. And I remember we had a number of weeks where we were thinking creatively about how we could create the best online platform that would allow mentors and mentees to interact. So I was really impressed with the way everyone worked together as a team.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think really, I mean, you both have said it, and I can only repeat that we worked as a team incredibly well. I think what attracted everyone to this program was, you know, our passion, and that made us sensitive to the way we talked. We wanted to be inclusive. We wanted to learn together and with each other, and mostly able, hopefully, to also create resources that you've just mentioned that are applicable to AO generally, because we are a global organization and there are cultural and other differences in each region, and sometimes in clinical divisions as well. Any additional thoughts, or should we move to what to do differently?
I think I just would be good at this point to mention the fact that, you know, we've got to remember contextually that this was all happening and then COVID came along, you know, and so I think there were, again, as there always are with these challenges, from that, you know, there are obstacles. And of course, staying connected, we'd always been, as it were, a virtual community, except for these occasional get togethers we had, that we were not resourced to have quarterly meetings in that way. But I think that we were able through COVID and through, you know, lessons learned in online technology like, you know, Zoom and Teams, that, you know, we were able to then deliver podcasts that would be not just in the moment effective, but also, you know, a legacy item that others can use. And so I'm really proud of the fact that we were able to deliver, I think, some really good, I don't want to be patronizing, say educational, but informational sessions that bring things to the attention of larger groups. And, you know, I think, you know, in the context of mentorship that Marinus talks about, aside from the sort of clinical, non-clinical mentorship, we also have to think that initiative, that interest in mentorship has bled over into, for example, AOPEA, with now interest in research mentorship. So I think we can be very proud of some of these sort of flagship initiatives that were developed. I think the comms through Faculty Forum has been really important. We've done updates at trustees meetings and the DeVos courses. We've had the breakfast together at the DeVos courses. So there's a number of things that I really hope will stay around as touch points with the membership and as products to communicate in an ongoing way. So I think those for me are other really important elements that we've done, along, of course, with you know, the development of, you know, the importance of impact assessment. I mean, again, one of the challenges we faced at the start of this was having objective data of, quote unquote, the issues. When we then had that, we obviously need to be able to go back and then measure impact. And so I think our 1, 3, and 5 year strategy document that you really spearheaded, Tatiana, is going to be central to that. And it allows us to measure our performance, see what's going well, see what's proving more challenging, and maybe allocate, hopefully in the future, resources towards that. So those would be my sort of additional comments on I think what went well.
Yeah, and just to add to that, Matthew, I mean, you made me think of the nomination committee checklist and the recruitment practices that are also featuring the need for inclusive language. I mean, that was really also your group had it very difficult because it was very, let's say, dry. I think Marinus, your group was amazing in putting together the mentorship program. And of course, everyone worked on actually then producing the online, the education accredited online modules that now make the AO Access journey. But not to forget, Matthew, I mean, your group in terms of really trying to change policies and change or positively influence policies and processes, because we always worked with three pillars: raise awareness, offer education, and change policies and practices. And so your group, I think the documentation from the output of documentation from your group is really now has reached the levels of foundation board, community development commissions. And I think we have this buy-in now from the leadership that is amazing.
Yeah, and I think I would echo that. I think, again, it stems from the diversity of the group that we were able to assemble, because I think by having individuals with very different experiences of interfacing with the AO Foundation, whether that's exclusively through their local, their local community of clinicians, or it's at a leadership role within a clinical division or at the AO Foundation, whatever that is, we had a really good understanding of some of the challenges. And we'd spend a lot of time, I mean, as Marinus alluded to, we understood, I think, what we wanted to do, but how you delivered a strategy to be effective in that and to navigate, it's very, sometimes very difficult with instituting change, because when you ask people to change, the background assumption is that they're doing something wrong now. And it's, in a sense, it's a fault game. And we really made a lot of efforts to avoid that. We didn't want to look backwards and say it was never personal. It was never about good versus evil. It was only about aspirationally trying to just all of us do better and to benchmark ourselves against what we'd like the organization to look like and drive towards that. And so I think you're right that some of these policy documents, those that relate to sort of changes in process, I really hope that they sustain and they're picked up. They are hard to do, but they're really, really important.
The other thing we had too, Matthew and Tatiana, was we just had this uncanny ability to have advocacy at so many different levels. I think it was a timing thing, and the people that were involved that were also involved at different levels of the AO. So we had strong support all the way from the foundation port that put through the project. We had advocacy at trustee level. We had advocacy at commission levels. We had people talking to other members at various courses and also at resident level. So we just had the timing was great. And I think COVID, despite the challenges that it created, provided this digital transformation that allowed us to bring many of those elements together in a very short period of time, where people were not as preoccupied with the day-to-day service requirements of their particular roles and tasks, and had a little bit more time to reflect and create something that was outside the square for what we were doing in AO at that point in time.
Mm, you're absolutely right. So looking back, are there any specific areas where you would have applied a different approach or a different strategy? And if so, could you give some examples? Marinus, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So we had, thank you, Tatiana, we had the data that had been delivered, but we had some data. We didn't have all the data. And the challenge was, how much data do we collect before we roll forward with the project? Because you can always spend an inordinate amount of time focusing on data and forget about the delivery of the project. So data was an issue, I think, in terms of what the impact would be of a mentorship program on the organization to be able to articulate and advocate for its support. The other thing we had was a lack of female candidates for many of the different roles in the AO as we were moving forward and thinking about how to create more diverse profiles through our organization. So I think we grappled with and eventually came to terms with, and I was really impressed with some of the contributions from our members within the task force in terms of the differing types of diversity. We hadn't really pinned them out and described them prior to starting to describe the project, but it became very obvious very soon, that this was important to the organization in terms of understanding different elements of diversity. And then I think one of the big stumbling blocks we came to, challenges and opportunities for growth, was how we handled what initially we thought was unconscious bias, which became implicit bias, and there were different ways of naming it and describing it. But it was getting people to feel comfortable with the way they appreciated things and the way they could reflect on that and the way they could become more open and diverse and inclusive in their own thinking. And I think there's some of the challenges we had, and we could have spent a little bit more time describing what it was and what it meant and how important this was moving forward. We had some opportunities for growth and opportunities for change in terms of alignment of the different elements of governance within the AO. You know, I think one of the very important things when you're delivering a project like this is aligning all the levels of leadership, all the levels, both executive and non-executive, both the surgeon and the clinician leaders, but also the leaders of administration, so that we're all working and we're all aligned on the same page. And I felt sometimes we were working perhaps in silos at times. We were trying to share, but there are other strong points of views in other parts of the siloed organization that we had at a point in time. But at the same time, I think we worked hard to try and overcome that. And that would be something I would work on continuously and very much in a progressive way and very much in an inclusive way, because I think we generated awareness very well. We probably created a sense that we needed to be compliant. We tactically started to introduce elements of our program within the AO network, but it's the integration into the whole program that I think that was where we found most of our stumbling blocks, and that's what I think we need to work on continuously and very harmoniously in a very positive way to really grow the program as we move forward, utilizing the Community Development Commission and all the other commissions as well as our advocates, as our first followers to bring this program to its fruition. So I think they're sort of the thoughts I had when I thought about what I may do a little differently next time.
Thank you. Matthew, what are your thoughts?
I think this is always the difficult part of this conversation, but I think it's also probably the most important part, particularly if we're going to be thinking about this conversation as a jumping off point for the next leaders of this program and the community at large. I think that for me, the elephant in the room is, you know, what I've learned is that change is hard, which is an obviousism, but I think we've really seen it in action. I think we work within an organization that has essentially a 2-year cycle time on leadership. I know the leadership lasts longer than that, but it does change. There have also been underpinning sort of shifting sands in terms of organizational structure, reporting structure for the various elements that we interact with. And I think we can't overestimate the importance of that, for me, unsettled foundation on what we've been doing. Not that it's changed our priorities, but it certainly has impacted our ability to deliver, because there has been at points a sense of wonderment, certainly from me, as to whether this is ever going to see light of day, frankly. because it felt like we were discussing with one group of people, then that might change, and certainly resource allocation might change. So for me, I don't think I want to step back from this program without trying to be straightforward. I feel this whole initiative suffered from having absolute buy-in across the board at the leadership level. And I think we have to take some responsibility for that in terms of perhaps our communication of the imperative wasn't strong enough. I think we did try hard, and I think the leadership tried hard as well, but I think we have to give ourselves a non-passing grade on that. So for me, there needs to be a very clear signal top down that this is an absolute priority. I think some have done that at some times, others less so. I recognize there are lots of changes going on, and that's my point, is there were a lot of substantive structural changes going on that in a sense posed real jeopardy to this organization, that perhaps meant that our initiative wasn't the most pressing concern. But I think it's critical that it is re-engaged as a priority. The other areas I think where leadership could have been really helpful would have been with a more positive response to some of the things that we generate. For example, the importance of change at the non-com level, the importance of change at the level of who is the electorate, who is eligible to be nominated, what about cycle times and progression for individuals through the program. These are all things where strong leadership could have invoked change that would be very hard at our point, at our level, to really do. So I think there are a number of things that I would have liked to have seen done differently. I think there were some, what probably to others seem small things, that I think for me were really big things. And in particular, my memory comes back to conversations regarding our ability to collect data. So we sent out the ODI, which was essentially a free form survey. It went out. And one of the things that we identified, obviously, were these discrepancies and the underrepresentation. And I think it would have been critical to be able to invoke at that point some level of data collection process, whether it's through membership renewals or through courses, where we could do better than what's your name, what's your clinical division. Individuals these days, and even all of us on this call, are used to, if we sign up for a bank account, answering questions, or at least having the opportunity to answer questions about sexual orientation, about ethnicity, etc. And there's always an opt-out. But I think that by simply not addressing that, by not allowing us to even offer that, we really missed a trick. And it's very hard to measure and demonstrate impact on diversity when we can't even explain the diversity and express it in terms of numbers. So for me, those are the areas I would do differently. I think they're difficult things. Mm. They're not easy. But I think it takes an institutional, organizational commitment to really push this forward. And it needs to span the cycle times of the individuals. And in an ideal world, of course, the underlying institutional structure, the org structure, if you like, it would be helpful if that was a little bit more stable.
Yeah, Matthew, look, I think that the core of the issue, I think that a lot of the times we talk about, is that engagement process. There was some people within the organization that probably felt that this didn't apply to them at all, right? They this wasn't for them, it was for other people. There were others that probably felt we were focusing on one underrepresented group rather than on creating a level playing field for everyone within the organization, right? And I think when people, and this is where the comms could have been a little different, when people view the project as a very, strand-specific approach, then they think something's being done to them rather than the organization's growing as a whole, right? So I think one of our opportunities would have been to engage a little bit further and a little bit stronger so that, we're working on, and I realize all the challenges and the obstacles, but we're working on living and breathing through mentorship, all the various diversity, equity, and inclusion educational programs that we put together, and all the initiatives that address some of that. One of Tatiana's favorite words, that intersectionality, and so, I think we could have done a little bit more on that with the communication channels. Mm-hmm. But we probably didn't have the resources to be able to do that because we were so busy creating content.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think resourcing is another really key area. I mean, I think that we at times did need more resourcing and had hoped for more resourcing, and it wasn't evident. And I think those drifts in resourcing were reflective of the underlying drift in prioritization of this initiative. And again, it's not an issue of blame. It's simply an issue of, I think, being straightforward about the challenges. And hopefully the leadership can look at that in a positive way. And the leadership of this initiative will create new ways, as you say, Aranis, to engage and do perhaps better than we did. But it's important, I think, to recognize that we are all on the same journey. This organization, front and center, is important to all of us, whether we're employed by it or we're just working with it. It's central to many of us for our professional development. Mm-hmm. And the overarching thing that I take away from all of my experiences with AO isn't really what I've learned at the table, as it were. I mean, that's been really helpful, of course, but it's been the relationships with people. And I just want to make sure, as we all do, that this community that's been so good for me can be even better for people after me.
We tried to create a very inclusive and very safe environment for people to discuss things. I mean, I was incredibly impressed with the meetings we had online, with the various mentors that were coming on board, and how they shared some of their sensitivities relating to, how they wanted to be. Perhaps some of their skill set deficiencies related to some of the programs we were rolling out. What we were getting towards and what we were working towards, we never quite got there. And I think it was one of the things we aimed to do was some more data analysis in terms of what the effect was on the individual and the organization. And I think we need to put that back on the radar. So as we move forward into the next group of leaders, that review of policies and processes and data and really having some qualitative research and audit related to what our impact's been on the members, because I think the key factor is this demonstrated a commitment to our members and a commitment to the improvement of the members as a whole, but also our impact on the organisation as a whole. And I think we need to keep that on the radar and try and ensure that the next group of DEI and mentor leaders try and address it.
I would just like to add, I mean, you both alluded to it before, context is really important in good ways and in bad ways, be it in good ways from COVID, but then also context in terms of what data is AO collecting as an organization or isn't collecting. And hence we ended up driving a data process that didn't exist, that ideally, is asked for by the whole organization. So data on our members that we can then measure that is relevant for our initiatives and our strategy, but that is also or should be relevant for anyone who works in and with AO. And I'm not going to elaborate on this, but this is something that has been recognized, and there are people now who are proactively working on this, and that will help us actually to measure and celebrate our successes and really identify gaps so we can target our efforts specifically to those that haven't benefited from it yet. So we're almost at the end. I have a couple of more questions. Maybe I could ask each of you, what's the one thing that DEI and mentoring strategies need in order to be successful?
Tatiana, that's a great question. I'll try and keep it succinct. And but it's meaningful conversations. It's really the creation of an inclusive culture. And I think it's creating belonging through some form of shared dialogue that people understand, that empowers them, and that makes them feel an important part of the organization, and makes them feel and shows them how they can affect change within our organization at all levels. And I think all the projects that we do are really aimed towards creating the diverse spread and the diverse mix of individuals that gives the opportunity for our organization to grow as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, the standout would be allyship. I think we need to create as a norm the need for the importance of allyship. And I mean that across, not just in the context of a sort of classic DEI allyship in the face of adversity, but actually at every level. And so I was struck, one of the moments in my sort of ODI career, as it were, came towards the end of a meeting last year. And I was sitting at a meeting. There was a presentation from an individual who was talking about the surgeon. And it was a really trivial thing, but I remember being at a trustees meeting 6 years ago or so, and whenever the word surgeon was used, it was he, and it was a picture of a guy. And at this meeting last year, it was the surgeon when he or she does this. And it was a trivial thing, and it made me realize that we had some impact. But for that to be sustained, we're going to need, at leadership levels and at membership levels, individuals to be allies for one another, allies for change. That would be my overarching recommendation, is that that's what we need.
So, Matthew, you know, I'd agree with that. I think, you know, allyship is really an ability for us to activate the membership. And I think it's a really nice way, as you're alluding to, of creating some social change, right? And transforming transforming that organization, our organization. So I think it's a really important point for the future leaders to take on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this, you know, the organization has always been about connectivity, about network, and about, you know, being a group effort. And I think allyship just feeds right into that there's nothing more energizing than feeling like you're with, you know, you're on a journey with people rather than trying to bash your head against an individual wall. So, you know, Marinus, Tatiana, I mean, I think this has been a really important conversation to have. And, you know, with us now coming to the ends of our sort of engagement actively with ODI and stepping aside, you know, the way we've advocated in terms of letting the next generation come on board. Hopefully, as we do that, won't be an acute process, but we step to the side and allow these individuals to come on board. Hopefully the conversation stands as a sort of a moment in time representation and documentation of what worked well. The lessons we've learned hopefully can be used as a jumping off point for the next steps of this exciting journey. And of course, our end goal is that, you know, at the end of this, the organization does benefit, and critically that the members feel that AO is and will always be the right home for them to exercise their professional clinical learning, their learning of non-clinical skills, and a lot of their friendships that will last them through their careers. So I'd really like to thank Tatiana for organizing this and for giving us an opportunity to sort of close this chapter, as it were, certainly of my professional involvement with ODI, and Marinus, for your, you know, continued support on this and leadership, particularly within the mentorship, and just reflect on the fact this has been certainly an educational journey that I've really enjoyed. I'm in some ways sorry to step back, but it's absolutely time, and I look forward to seeing what the next generation can bring.
I agree. Thank you, Matthew, and thank you, Tatiana.
Thank you for listening to the AO Access to Success podcast series.
Be sure to visit our webpage to facilitate your personal and professional development
by exploring dimensions of leadership
at AO Foundation, who we are, about AO Access.
To join the conversation.